Hello and welcome to the latest Money and Politics podcast. Now, this is the first one in a couple of weeks. My last one, of course, looked at the Fianna Fáil SDLP partnership. But this one is actually based on my first written blog in several months. I don't think I've done one since the end of July. Now, I can't blame the non-appearance of my blogs for the absence of political news or activity. If anything, the news, the speed, the frequency of developments made writing new blogs impractical, as no sooner as I've written some piece of considered political analysis that had been overtaken by events. However, there are other contributory factors as well, including a dose of COVID at the end of July, beginning of August, which was followed on by a fairly, won't say too troubling, sinus problem and upper respiratory tract infection that went on for a good few weeks and left me very, very short of breath and left my voice quite weak for a while. And I think people maybe even noticed this during the last Money and Politics podcast, where I think I did come across a little bit out of breath. So anyway, so the temptation therefore is to review what's happened since my last proper blog post since over the summer. But I've actually resisted that temptation and decided to instead A, return to a frequent theme, the leadership of Meatball Martin, and B, to look at this particular issue through the lens of comparison. And the idea for the comparison suggested itself by the coincidence of both Fianna Fáil and the SNP having their annual conferences within about a week of each other. For example, Fianna Fáil, the party in which the SNP was once modelled and a party from which the SNP used to take inspiration, held its 80th Ardesh in the RDS at the beginning of October. So that was on Friday, September the 30th, and Saturday, October the 1st. Meanwhile, the SNP, a party that is now far eclipsed, Fianna Fáil both in terms of its popularity and organisation, held its 88th National Conference in Aberdeen on the weekend from October the 8th, ending on Monday the 10th. And I think it finished up with the leader's speech on the afternoon of Monday the 10th. Now, rather than looking at the structure and the organisation of each conference or each event and looking at the numbers there and looking at the motions passed, I decided kind of putting on my hat as a speechwriter just to look at the two leader speeches and, in that great line from the Leaving Cert, compare and contrast these two speeches in terms of form, style, content and messaging. And I think it's a fair comparison to make and it's one that could probably only be really attempted this year, as both party leaders were addressing their conferences not just as their party leaders, but also as Taoiseach in Micheál Martin's case and as First Minister in Nicola Sturgeon's case. Now, in Micheál Martin, this was going to be his first and potentially his only leader's speech as Taoiseach, though in Nicola Sturgeon, I think this was possibly her seventh leader's speech as First Minister because she became First Minister back in 2014. So although Micheál is leader a little bit longer than she is, she is definitely the more experienced in terms of senior office holder having been First Minister. So the way I did this was to take the two officially published transcripts. So that's Micheál Martin's script as it appears on the Fianna Fáil website and the First Minister's speech as it appears on the SNP website. And also to compare the versions as broadcast live on the day. So Nicola Sturgeon's was taken from the YouTube channel and Micheál Martin's was taken from the RTE player. And what's clear from the very outset is that both Martin and Sturgeon are accomplished and experienced speakers. Both come across as assured and authoritative. It's also clear that they both enjoy the support and indeed I would go as far as to say the affection of their audience in their respective venues. Though I don't think it's unfair to point out that the SNP audience came across as more energetic, more enthused and more responsive than the Fianna Fáil counterpart. Now the first thing that strikes you in listening and reading to both the two speeches is a stark contrast in the mechanics. Martin's speech was by far the shorter of the two, both in terms of its word count and its duration, this due in large measure to the artificial and I would say unfair restrictions placed on it by RTE. Now, in fairness, the Britain broadcaster applies the same rules equally and fairly to all the main party leader speeches, so it's not unfair in those terms. But I think it's unfair in terms that it requires a major speech to fit into a 30-minute slot on an early afternoon, or Saturday evening, which is a rather primetime slot. Now, a 30-minute slot on television in reality means a 27-minute slot in terms of the actual speech. And that imposes a burden on those charged of crafting a speech that in reality cannot go beyond 26 minutes because you have to allow for the introduction and close and a couple of applause minutes. In fact, when in real terms, you're talking about a 23, 24-minute script. Now, Nicola Sturgeon's free speech writers were faced with no such obstacle, as the BBC carries its party leader speeches, be it from the Conservatives, Labour or the SNP or whoever, in full and regardless duration, though it does this by offering a slot that's off-peak and usually midday time afternoon on BBC Two. So now let's look at this statistics in a bit more detail. Because although Martin spoke for about 24 minutes, he crammed in a text that was a little over 3,200 words in length. Actually, when you go to the website, the full script is just over 3,400 words. But when I compared the speech as delivered to the speech as appeared on paper, you can see that there were several last-minute edits and cuts, possibly to facilitate huge time pressure. Now, I'll actually talk about this later because I think some of these were significant. All told, however, if you take it as 3,200 words delivered over 24 minutes, that's an average words per minute speaking rate of 133. Now that's high. Actually, that's more than high. Most speech writers would say it's far too high. And the result is you get a more rushed and hurried delivery that can sometimes come across as less engaged, even a bit shouty. There were several places when you can clearly see the Taoiseach attempt to cut short the audience applause so he can finish his race to complete the script before the TV cameras are turned off. That is not a position in which to place any leader delivering such an important keynote speech. His communications team should not have allowed this. They knew that they could not lengthen the time allowed to him, which was fixed by RTE, but they somehow or other seemed unwilling to change the one part that was under control, the length of the script. Now it's quite possible that they had no alternative in this, is that the Taoiseach kept insisting on putting extra things into it. But he also wanted, at some point, somebody should have been able to turn around to him and say, look, we cannot say everything you want to say, or we certainly cannot say it in the detail you seem to want to say it in. Also in their defence, they may have written the text thinking that they would have 26 minutes available to them. Because on the night, that 26 minutes fast became 24, as Minister Norma Foley's, let me be quite blunt about this, less than rousing introduction ate up just over 2 minutes of his valuable time. Now, the blame for this does not lie with the minister, but whoever was managing proceedings on the night. They could have easily cut her off by playing the Taoiseach's walk-on music, but they chose not to. Though why they thought the audience at home needed to hear Minister Foley read out the trite, come at the hour, come at the man line is beyond me. Though that said, even if the Taoiseach did have these extra 2 minutes, his speaking rate would only have only dropped down to 124 words per minute, and that again is still high. Now, the reason I'm making this point is because we look at Nicola Sturgeon's speech. Although she spoke for 55 minutes, her script, as published, was 5,260 words long. This meant that she had an average word per minute rate of just 95. That's 95 compared to Micheál Martin's 130. So consequently, her delivery was far less hurried and rushed than his. And as a consequence, her delivery came across as more conversational in style and tone. She had the time and the scope to let the audience respond and react to her key messages. She had no need to cut the applause short, quite the contrary, in fact. She could bask in and demonstrate that she was a political leader, a prime minister, in tune with her party and enjoying its voluble and enthusiastic backing. This more relaxed delivery was aided by her speechwriters using shorter sentences. The average length of a sentence in her speech was 10 words. That compares to 17 for Micheál Martin. Indeed, the longest sentence I could find in her speech was 30 words long, and that was at the beginning, and it was a tribute to the recently departed Queen Elizabeth II. Most of the sentences thereafter were at their longest 20 words long. The longest sentence in Micheál Martin's speech was 55 words long, and there were many, I think 40 or 50, that were somewhere up around 40 words long. Now, this is important as long sentences are difficult to read and fully grasp, even when somebody's just reading an article or a book. Doing it when you're reading it off an autocue and trying to address a large crowd, both at home and within the auditorium, only increases the potential for confusion and misunderstanding. So there were about 40 out of the 195 sentences in Micheál Martin's script were rated as very difficult to understand when screened through the Hemingway app. That meant they were long, had subjunctive clauses, etc., and therefore didn't convey a single message or a single meaning in one line. For Sturgeon, the score on the Hemingway app was just 9 out of 507 sentences, were rated as very difficult to understand. So her writers had ease of delivery as a clear goal when writing, crafting that text. And indeed, I have to say it's to Martin's immense credit as a speaker, especially given the timing and structural issues with the text, that he avoided any stumbles or errors in his delivery. But enough of the mechanics, what about the content and the messaging, because that's what the meat of this is. Looking at the messaging in both scripts, we get a better insight into the two very contrasting leaderships. Both come across as experienced and competent. Both look like leaders, both sound like leaders, but only one conveys the messaging and vision of a leader looking forward. And it's on this metric that Sturgeon's script and her delivery scores higher, much higher than Martin's. Where Martin's speech had a sense of trying to hit every single key micro issue and hit every button with a one for everyone in the audience approach, Nicola Sturgeon took the broad arch approach, charting a path to an independent Scotland. Where Micheál Martin offered a litany of past acts and government input, Sturgeon painted a broader canvas of the brighter, more progressive future and reinforced that with calls to action. Where Sturgeon, as the leader of the independence movement in Scotland, saw her speech as a vital opportunity to chart her vision towards independence, Martin, in his twin roles of A, leader of Ireland's historically preeminent Republican Party, and two, the leader of the nation, indeed the leader of a Republican nation, as Taoiseach, he saw this as a chance just to set out his record on a range of issues, as if he was delivering his annual report as the Chief Operating Officer of Ireland, 26 Counties Incorporated. So rather than setting out a future vision as Nicola Sturgeon chose to do, Martin opted again to go for policy detail and settled for a review of his own record as Taoiseach. Now, that's a very valid strategy for a leader after the first full year in government, telling supporters and the public how you've delivered on your pre-election promises. But is it really the best strategy when your party is 10 points lower in the polls than it was a year before the last election, and when this speech could be your only chances to address your audacious Taoiseach? And let me illustrate my despondency about Martin's future with these two contrasting clips. In these two clips, the two leaders address their party's core aims and raison d'etre, being independence for Sturgeon and unity and republicanism for Martin. And you can see how less than enthused Martin is in pressing his case. His language is fine, but whereas Sturgeon uses stories to create a personal link to our passion for and commitment to independence, Martin is more distant, quasi-professorial, even Moontory. In terms of word count and in duration, both of these clips are roughly equal in size. But you will hear that Nicola Sturgeon has the luxury of her taking her time to let the excitement build.
10 years ago, support for independence was at 23%. 5 years ago, 45%. Now, in that gold standard measure of public opinion, support for independence stands at 52%. As we know, it is even higher amongst young people. So it is tempting sometimes to assume an inevitability about independence, that the arc of history is moving firmly in its direction. I hope and believe that will turn out to be true. But we would be wrong, utterly wrong, to take it for granted. Our job is to make the case and win the argument. That means not just talking to ourselves, but reaching out to others not yet persuaded. I remember in the 2014 campaign, speaking at a public meeting in Leith. It was jam-packed, so busy in fact that the organisers asked those who had already decided to vote yes to leave, so that those still undecided could hear the arguments. That is the approach I want us to take now, though for the avoidance of doubt I am not asking you to get up and leave. But I do want us to resolve today that from here on we will speak less to each other and more to those outside our ranks. I know that some watching at home right now will never be persuaded to vote yes. You oppose independence as strongly and from as much principle as we support it. I respect that. That is democracy. And please remember, whatever happens in future, Scotland belongs to you as much as it does to us. Scotland belongs to all of us. And for those who want to be convinced but still have questions and doubts, it is our job to persuade, reassure and inspire.
Next May, it will be 25 years since the people of all parts of this island voted for the Good Friday Agreement. Fianna Fáil will always be proud of its central role in securing ceasefires, negotiating the agreement and developing North-South cooperation. The agreement gave us the peace. The agreement gave us the peace we all yearned for and an opportunity for a new beginning. But the harsh reality is that too little has been done to bring communities together. Opportunities to tackle disadvantage and to tackle sectarianism have not been taken and remain unfulfilled. There has been a lot of talk about unity and reconciliation, but very little work done to actually build the bridges which make it happen. Well, that time is over. We have to get on with the hard work of moving from talk to action. And that's exactly what we are doing. The shared island. The shared island initiative, which I established, is the first time in our history where there is a sustained investment to support vital North-South projects to build deeper connections and understanding. Projects that have been talked about for decades are now underway. The most inclusive dialogue ever entered is also underway. And in government, Fianna Fáil is determined to work with others to show the Irish people that the biggest challenges can be met and overcome. Real and sustained progress demands that you just don't look for headlines, but that you look for credible solutions.
Now, at one point in the Micheál Martin clip, you could hear the Taoiseach make a rare verbal gaffe or trip. And this is interesting for two reasons. Number one, it's actually rare. I don't think I heard him do that during the rest of the speech, although he had been racing through an overly complex and overly wordy script. It's his first real slip-up. The second reason is this is the point where the speech as delivered differs from the official script published on the party website. This is the location of the biggest cut in text. And it's a cut that does Martin no credit. These are the omitted lines from that clip. And so too is a major series of research studies to start properly understanding the differences, similarities and opportunities in relation to health services, trade, childcare, education and other vital areas between North and South. That's real action. Central to our identity of a party is that we believe in the Republican vision set out in 1916 of a country which truly unites all the people of our island, which respects diversity, different identities, and puts behind it the divisions of the past. And we believe that it is the duty of every one of us to do the hard work of building understanding, unity, and a sense of shared community. That is our work. Now, these are the only lines in the original text where Martin lays claim to his party's vision of republicanism. They are the closest thing in his entire script to a call to action. But because he is pressed for time, they are dropped. It's astonishing. Frankly, it's shameful. So where Nicola Sturgeon's speech was political, Martin's was mid-level managerial, civil servant-y. The fact that Taoiseach and his advisors thought that this was the speech he needed to deliver right at this moment tells me that his leadership is now running on empty. The end of the Martin era is in sight. This was the speech of a party leader on a speedy autocue and an even speedier autopilot as he looks around for personal opportunities elsewhere. Martin and co are already heading towards the exit, and they're heading that direction of their own volition. This is not about heaves or spills. Micheál Martin already knows his time as leader is coming to an end. The only outstanding question is timing and how it will be managed. Will he depart at a moment that best suits him in a year or so? Or will it be at a time chosen by his parliamentary colleagues? A time that gives his party its best chance of preparing for the potential political catastrophe of the next general election. This is about timing, nothing else. Frankly, the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party has very little time left to it to address this question. It must set about this task with all the speed and haste of Micheál Martin reading his last ever Oireachtas speech. And there you have it. This is my latest Money on Politics podcast. It's October the 18th. It's a Tuesday afternoon. It's about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I hopefully will get back to doing these more regularly. Actually, I'm going to get back to doing these weekly from next Monday, Tuesday onwards. I might have one or two breaks in the meantime, but I'll try and keep to a regular schedule. So I know this is me kind of maybe banging the same drum about this, and I know this is me going on continually saying that I think Micheál Martin's leadership is coming to an end. I've thought this for a long time. I argued about 2 years ago that COVID was delaying it, because I did not see how it would be possible for the Fianna Fáil party to even entertain the notion of changing leader in the middle of a national pandemic, in the middle of what was a genuine national crisis. I think for Fianna Fáil to be seen to be nasal-gaving and looking at its own future then, during that crisis, was not good politics. I had kind of said rather glibly that I thought that we wouldn't see a return to national politics until the pubs had fully reopened, particularly the wet pubs. Well, we've been in that situation since almost the start of the year, certainly since St. Patrick's Day onwards. And I think you're seeing a slow progression through that. But I think it's important to note, and that's the point I'm trying to make above, that this is no longer a case of a parliamentary party plotting against Micheál Martin and trying to move its leader. I think he's already moved towards the door. I think he's already going in that direction. The issue now is, does he go at a time that gives his party the best chance to survive, or does he go at a time that gives him the best chance to get the job he wants next? And I think if it's the former, then it has to be sooner rather than later, and the parliamentary party must take control. If it's going to be the latter, at a time which suits Micheál Martin, which rewards him for his leadership of since 2011, well, then I think the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party and the Fianna Fáil party as a whole will pay an enormous price. Not because it facilitated Micheál Martin, but because it spent more time focusing on that than it did on the message it needs to send to the people. It has spent more time focusing on that than it has in realising that what the public wanted in late 2019 and early 2020 at the general election was not what Fianna Fáil had offered. That Fianna Fáil had a serious misreading of the public mood. Indeed, I'd argue that they had it since the renewal of confidence and supply. But certainly in 2019 and into 2020, having said to the public, rightly, that the outgoing government needed to be replaced, and that Fine Gael needed to be put out of office, and that there needed to be a new, more radical approach, especially on housing, but also on healthcare, to then put Fine Gael back in, and to come up with a plan, Housing for All, that was a decent plan, that does reflect Fianna Fáil approach, but to allow it to be so tempered and to be so tampered by Fine Gael, that it is still too market-driven and still too back-loaded, and still underwhelming in terms of the size of the crisis ahead of it. I think they were huge political mistakes made by Fianna Fáil. And unless it moves speedily to address those and to explain to the public why it has made those mistakes and how it intends to correct those, then I think Fianna Fáil is in a hiding to nothing at the next election. And I think that is going to be to all our cost. And whether people like or dislike Fianna Fáil, in terms of keeping the centre, in terms of keeping to moderate politics, in terms of avoiding the politics of Sinn Féin versus Fine Gael, which I fear will be the politics of the next decade or two. Well, then I think Fianna Fáil, even if Fianna Fáil were to disappear at the next election, we would have to reinvent it within a year or two, because that's what we would need to do to restore our politics. That's it. That's my message for this week. That's my podcast for this week. And we will talk to you all next week. So in the meantime, take care. Bye-bye.